Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday morning adult discussion group here at Wings. And this morning we're going to be in Matthew chapter 17, and I think we're going to start right around or right specifically on 17:22. And Buddy, you want to read?
No, okay.
Buddy's going to read out of the Classic Amplified and go on all the way down to the end of the chapter.
All right. So we're starting at 22?
22.
Matthew chapter 17, verse 22. When they were going about here and there in Galilee, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be turned over into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and he will be raised to life again on the third day." And they were deeply and exceedingly grieved and distressed. When they had arrived in Capernaum, the collectors of the half shekel, the temple tax, went up to Peter and said, "Does not your teacher pay the half shekel?" He answered, "Yes." And when he came home, Jesus spoke to him about it, first saying, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do earthly rulers collect duties or tribute? From their own sons, or from others not of their own family?" And when Peter said, "From other people, not of their own family," Jesus said to him, "Then the sons are exempt. However, in order not to give offense and cause them to stumble, that is to cause them to judge unfavorably and unjustly, go down to the sea and throw in a hook. Take the first fish that comes up, and when you open its mouth, you will find there a shekel. Take it and give it to them to pay the temple tax for me and for yourself."
Okay. There's one thing at the very beginning. I decided to go back all the way to 22 because this thing, that kind of got me. 22 and 23 before we started talking about the tribute to Caesar. It says, while they abode in Galilee, Jesus said unto them, "The Son of Man shall be betrayed into the hands of men. And they shall kill him. And the third day he shall be raised again." And they were exceedingly sorry. Now, I thought it was interesting that Jesus himself in the spirit kind of separated his fleshly body from his spiritual being. He talked about himself in the third person. Don't you think that's kind of strange?
That is interesting.
Like, it would be like me saying, you know, when it's time to die, you know,
yeah,
the son of Margin Roy Wellman getting ready to die, or the daughter, you know, and she's gonna fall into the hands of man, and they're gonna do this to her, but almost as if, but it's not gonna affect me.
Yeah,
I am the son of God, and I am, you know.
Yeah, and I don't, Buddy. What did your translation say in 22? Did it say mine is the NIV? I think it's the NIV. Says. It says the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men.
Yes. He called himself the Son of Man and the Son of God.
Right, right.
Interchangeably.
Right, right. But it makes me wonder, and I don't know if this is where you're going, but it makes me wonder as you're talking about that, was it more strategic as to when he said what? I don't know. You know, like, it's like, was there a reason he said man in some context and God in others?
Yeah, it's his physical body that they were going to crucify and torture and bury, but he had overcome it. Son of God was going to be raised again.
Yeah, and it's funny also that that was the part the disciples heard and felt sorrow about, where they didn't hear the good news at the end,
yeah,
that he was going to raise again. And he was, you know, it's so funny, we get so tied up in our emotions and our you know, mm-hmm, in our, you know, natural brain and where it leads us, that we lose the essence of the message sometimes, because we're just like, we can't take the sorrow of yeah, loss of, yeah, of somebody and a tangible loss of somebody.
And if you read Mark and Luke, I looked that up, it kind of shows it to you. It says, in Mark, it says, after they departed and passed through Galilee, and he would not that any man should know it, he took them away quietly, and he wanted to go someplace quiet. And then, for he taught his disciples and said unto them, still in the third person, the Son of Man is delivered. Well, that's kind of different too. The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men, and they shall kill him. And after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day. And they said, and then it says, but they understood not that saying. They didn't understand.
Yeah, they, because they hadn't witnessed it.
And it had never seen had happened
it
before.
And yeah, it was foretelling. So, and yeah. Said,
and they were afraid to ask him.
Mm-hmm. And they couldn't quite comprehend, because they didn't have that vision.
Yeah. Sometimes they will go to him and ask him, but they said they were afraid to ask him what in the world he was talking about.
Well, maybe they didn't want to. Maybe they weren't ready to accept, mm-hmm, the loss, mm-hmm, of his physical body, and they couldn't comprehend what it meant for him to raise again.
What's this? What does this translation say here? When they gathered together in Galilee, Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed and turned over to his enemies. They will kill him, and in 3 days he will be resurrected. When the disciples heard these words, they were devastated. But that's kind of drops that in there, you know. And then the next verse is, you know, and after they arrived at Calpurnia, they kind of just dropped devastating news in there, and then they just go on with the story.
It's funny how the Bible does that. I mean, and I don't know that it was meant to be a chronological account necessarily. So it's like you're left to guess. You know, oh well, that was an abrupt message, and then on to
the church guest. That more and more lately, taking them off and telling them the truth.
Yeah,
telling them what was going to happen.
As they approached the crucifixion.
Just so that they would have hope, I think, when they saw what was going to occur.
Yeah.
I think it was forewarning them so they would know, and would come the time he's preparing them, that when it becomes a reality, they'll remember what he said, that they were going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I believe God.
The power of the fulfillment of the prophecy that he laid before them. He was laying that groundwork, because you know he knew what was to happen, but they weren't there yet. And we have limitations, because we aren't God, and we can't see. We don't have the vision that.
And if even got a little glimpse of it, I think it would be. Thought they said devastated and wouldn't want to accept it. Don't really want to accept it, knowing that he's no longer going to be with them.
Because I
just believe God forewarns even us and lets us know things. I know 2 weeks before my dad passed, all that, I had a feeling something was going, and so did my younger sister, because there's 5 of us kids. But we, after we're married and grown up and stuff, there was a period of time that we both had lived with, and there became a closer relationship, I believe, that we had with our parents than the others. And I remember when my friend and I were talking about our parents and the loss, and I remember God said, right where I was at, corner of High Street and Broadway, and God, and we had been discussing about
how hard it would be to lose our parents, because we worked together for about 26 years, she and I did. And God said, I was sitting there at the stop sign, and I was looking up thinking about what we had discussed. And God said, what if I did take your father? And oh, I just broke down crying, because this is something I just didn't want to think about at all. And then for 2 weeks before he passed, there was this feeling. The same thing with my son. There was this feeling of something is going to happen. And I thought, I was my father, you my son. And there was not a acceptance or wanting it to be. Mm-hmm. But be, remember the little lady I took care of, and I've been talking to her. We prayed together every day. I took care of her 6 years. And when Charles passed, and I called her, and I was devastated, she said, now, Brenda, you know God has already been showing you this for over 2 weeks. I was hysterical. Mm-hmm. I was driving. Mm-hmm. And she said, I even thought that I was going to pass, because it was so real to you that you knew something was coming, you know?
Yeah.
And she comforted me. I'm going to cry. Uh-huh. And talked to me and reminded me that this is no, like, she didn't come out and say it, but she said, now, Brenda, you know that for 2 weeks. And it was true. And then I started thinking about the things that God had been speaking and showing me those 2 weeks before.
Yeah, he was preparing you for what was to come, which, just like he was his disciples here. I mean, it's just, you know, I probably sounded a little, you know, critical of the apostles. It wasn't that. It's just we have the perspective of ex post facto analysis, in the sense that we know what happens. We know what he's leading up to. They know. They're there with them. They're amongst them. And to try to grapple, our brains just can't accept that loss. Until it's like reality. I think it's like, it's just something about our human nature that doesn't allow us to process those things until we completely give it up to him and seek his understanding and wisdom.
And then the reality of it, he so comforts, we could not accept or experience the full onslaught of losing someone, you know. And when you even go through any of y'all that went through your parents' funeral, it's like you're in shock.
Yeah.
But that is really God's mercy and his grace covering us. Because if we had the full reality of it, we couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
Couldn't go.
You know, I heard that there was a practice by monks at a certain monastery, and I don't know which one it was at this point, I forgot, but they used to make a ritualistic kind of habit of going to the graveyard to somebody they love and say, that is me, and to prepare them and to focus their minds on what was eternal rather than what was temporary and vapor, and just I thought it was a very interesting discipline, but I see where it could have a lasting impact on your spiritual growth.
You know, something else that you said grabbed me, where you said, when we were grown and had children, we stayed with your dad. Isn't it interesting the relationship you can have as an adult with your parents?
Oh, yeah, because you've grown and you see things altogether different.
Yes. And I can remember as my mother got very much older, it almost switched to where, I mean, I would come in and I would climb in bed with her and just kind of hold her in my arms like she was a little child.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had remember reading somewhere that older people just don't get, and they require human touch.
Mm-hmm.
Human touch. Yes. And I'd climb in bed with her and I just hold her in my arms, and it was very precious. For me and for her, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's funny. Model. It's funny how we return to that sensorial like dependency as our bodies begin to deteriorate and break down. You know, because I see that same thing in my babies. Like sometimes, if I've ruled out everything else, it's not a diaper. It's not that they're hungry. It's not any. They're not. It's not that they're tired. They just want to be comforted by the touch of love, and it's pretty amazing, really. It's just like by this I got it down. I know how to troubleshoot different cry cadences and whatever, but to sometimes it is just that. You know, I've heard somebody say, you know, you're all sensation from the point of, from birth to a certain age.
Oh, it is, because God has made us to be such beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The, love and touch. Remember, they did experiments way back, and babies, they weren't touched or loved.
Oh, yeah, however, yeah. How
and the one
they become
that
psychopathic.
Loved,
yeah, very, very, very feel. Scary consequences that, you know, are deep rooted in. You know,
and how
dark
God
spirit
has created us to love.
Yeah,
to be
he created us in His image and likeness, right? Like we were made to love. We weren't made to not. So that's essentially I've heard that said a lot. Like we revert back to our you know the way we came into this world as we go out.
Yeah,
that was very.
Well, seriously, my hair is getting thinner. Yeah, all my bodily hair is gone. You know, we're turning back into what we were before. We're good. You know, I saw a picture one time of a man and a woman, their babies, and then their children, and then their teenagers, then they're full grown, then they're older, and by the time they get back to the 80s and the 90s, they look just like you lose your teeth.
Yeah.
You know, it all you go right back.
Yeah.
Right back to where you were.
It's a long, long surrender.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say this. When you read all three readings, where it says the Son of Man will be betrayed into the hands of men and they will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life. And the disciples were filled with grief. It's like they didn't hear he will be raised to life in the third day.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they stopped listening, and I guess
soon
if you didn't hear that, that would be
killed him.
Yeah,
that he's gonna be gone. But he's also saying, "I'll be here. I'll be back in 3 days. Don't worry about it."
Yeah, it's funny how we stop listening at key places that completely inverts the significance of
the devastation of the one word killed.
Yeah, yeah. That like they couldn't move past
here.
That.
And it's in all three verses.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And in two of the translations, it says they didn't understand. They were afraid to ask him. Wow.
Yeah.
I would want to understand a little bit more about the afraid to ask and why. I mean, was it the social context they were in? Was it that they felt unworthy? Was it that, you know, was it that they just didn't want to think about it? They want to put it out of their mind and not?
Afraid to accept it. Afraid because
maybe
they knew that
they didn't want it.
They knew if he was saying it, they'd have to accept it.
It's called F-E-A-R.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, Aaron Roach and I, we were talking quite a bit about that fear, because you know, as masculine men, like we, you know, fear sounds like something that you don't. And it's an undesirable trait. I think he might be here this morning, but yeah, it's like, but also, I'm reminded of the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So you know, the masculine part of me wants to say, well, no, I can't be in fear. I don't want to live in fear. And I think our society reinforces that. But I wonder if in some instances, from some vantage points, that fear has a different significance in our spiritual journey. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet, but if you figure it out, please let me know. Aaron and I were talking a little bit, trying to toil with it, because you know, as we get older and want to be good fathers to our children and good Christian men, we seek wisdom. And when I think about fear, it mentions in the Bible fear being the beginning of wisdom, or fear being the birthplace of wisdom, fear of the Lord, that is. I wonder what that, you know, I was challenged by that.
And don't you think the basis of fear, of most fear, is the unknown?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
I do, yeah.
If you're going to have surgery, or if you're going for an appointment, or if you're looking for results back from a test or what, yeah. There's that fear of not knowing.
The unknown and the inability to control the outcome, too, I feel like, is a
and
lot.
That's what I say to Kath now. I say, for me, physically, if something's going on, I want to know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to sit back and not go to the doctor or anything. I want to go, don't I?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just
go. I come
go.
From a family of people. My sister would not go to the doctor. She couldn't stand doctors. She would not go to the doctor. And of course, her son is a doctor now.
The irony of that.
Yeah,
it is an irony.
Strange. But the fear killed her.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I think the Lord calls us to faith. And I don't know, Kathy, if when you asked last time we were talking together, like if that was who you were thinking of, when you were kind of referencing, about the God of the living versus, you know, the God of, you know, cause, you know, the reality is I gave kind of a scriptural reference, but I don't know, you know, and it's unknown to me. And like you said, that unknown feeling is something that we have to embrace, I feel like, more than what our natural tendency inclines us to do, and it's a frightening place to be.
There, I don't think there's any way or any other place you can find to overcome that fear of the unknown except in the scriptures.
Except through faith.
Yes, faith. Faith is the substance.
Yeah.
Of things unknown.
Well, yeah. I think we were all created by, with the spirit of really able to have choices.
Yeah.
And that's just like you were saying, you go to the doctor and I'm scared to death. What's he gonna say? If you don't know, if you're afraid of what he's gonna say, how do you know? How can you make a choice of what you're gonna do? Well, and that's just. I'm talking on a medical thing there, but that's everyday life.
Yeah,
you know,
it casts
you.
Various...
You come up. Something happens in your life. You have a choice to do it either this way or this way, and it's either right or wrong.
But I think there comes the knowing when we think of things we're facing and what we're going through. Right, there comes that what we believe and we know. This and this and this has happened, and he's always been right there, that we are in his hands.
Well, that's...
And that he's going to work things out for our good.
Yeah.
No matter what our natural eyes are seeing, and his glory. But it's really trusting him in everything we face and everything we're going through. I remember God was showing me one time, I said, what? I was sitting worried about something. God said, I'm teaching you transference. I want everything that you come into and everything that you face, that you transfer it to me, because I am the burden bearer. I am, and he started showing me that. And it is because I think right in the beginning, we're fearful.
We're fearful of it.
We're just there's this woman that we're meeting together now, a group, and we meet every month now, and it's a bunch of different women from different churches, but they love the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet her. We used to go to different houses, so now we go to hers. She's 93.
Aww.
And she says, Shar says, that how I know, but I know and I believe. And she says, you know, and she shares with us, because she's had more years experience in him. And she said, because he lives, this is what she says, and I know. And she went to the doctor, she's got cancer on her one breast that has come through him, and she's not having treatment. She says, I'm not going to have treatment, because all it's going to do, and I think she's been dealing with this for can't tell you how many years I know we've been going and gathering together. Me and Buddy been married, but 8 years. We've been going and gathering together. We were just at the second Tuesday of every month. And she always is sharing something that God is doing and to us. And when she went to the doctor and got ready, he said, well, I put a stent in there. And she said, for what? When she went, actually had a mammogram, had not had for years. He said, well, you know you got cancer. And she said, I sat and I thought, he just told her just matter of factly. And she said, well, I'm not having treatment. She said, well, he said, well, she said, I'm not to talk to my other doctor about this. And she said, he said, who? And she said, God, my other. She's
the ultimate physician.
Yes. And he looked at her, went out the door. Because what can you say? Doctors know how much they can do.
They know what medicine can do. Yeah, they know the parameters of their limitations.
If they're
a smart one, they would.
But you know that.
Well, I just talked to my other doctor about this. She's had no pain. It still. She showed us this. She's had no pain. It's still in no pain and that. And she said she feels like. I will be here till he says so.
Yeah. And
she was the babysitter for us, me and my sisters and us brothers. And I look at her and just, I tell you, in amazement. I send her cards all the time. I send her one that she gets like every week, like I do to Clyde and them. I got cards here to give to Clyde and them. And she says, you don't know how much it means to get that card.
Oh.
I try to send different ones, because some I send the same one. Because I send so many, I forget.
Yeah.
And I make it from me and Buddy.
I buy them on us.
From my son Tobias, because he knows her. And then I put on there the Coventry Sisters, because that's the name that God has given me for us, mm-hmm. Coventry. He said, we have a Coventry with him. And also with one another, mm-hmm. and that's what he has shown us.
And I think everybody kind of gets the different path, and I love hearing people's wisdom that go through tribulations like that. But, I like to just get very curious when those people tell those stories, because it's they're sharing you know. Glimpses of the Lord's hand in things and
it increases your faith.
I believe it's
because he's no respecter of persons.
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes back to what I said before. We all know we need to trust in the Lord for whatever is going,
mm-hmm.
But that comes to do I make the choice to do it or do I make the choice not to?
Sometimes it's not easy.
And sometimes it's not easy. And Kath and I talk about that more than we think. We'll sit there and she'll be saying something or I'll be saying something. She'll say, just, we believe and trust in the Lord and all this stuff. And we go, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
End of the conversation.
Yeah. Why were we talking about? I'm interested, Kathy, what the fish, the temple tax.
Okay, let's go on. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. I don't know what I'm doing here.
So the 24th verse, we were talking, so he's talking to Simon Peter, and I also think it's interesting. Did your translation say Simon and Peter in that too?
In the
25th, he calls him Simon. When he asked the question, and then
all I got is Simon.
Oh, you got Simon. It doesn't say Peter.
No.
Okay.
Down a little further.
Yeah.
26 is Peter.
Okay. Yeah. Just again, yes. It's that interchanging of names, and
like Jacob and Jacob and Israel.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting. Was that purposeful? Was there significance there, or just so happened he was going by an alias and just said, "Hey, Simon." But because Because Jesus gave him the name Peter, right?
When they came to Capernaum,
his name is Peter.
He came to Peter.
Yeah, when he came, followed him.
And then he says, called him. What thinkest thou, Simon? Mm-hmm. He says to him, so he came to Peter, and he said, doth not your master pay tribute? They that received the tribute came to Peter. The tax collector came to Peter. And he said, doesn't your master pay tribute? And he said, yes.
Yeah, I guess where I was going with that is I always like to kind of look through a lens, and maybe it was just instilled in me growing up in this church is through, you know, looking at it through the lens of the carnal mind and the natural versus the spiritual. And I guess where I was going with that is that I feel like when Jesus called Peter as a disciple, it makes a point, I think in several of the Gospels, to say that Jesus called him Peter, but his name was Simon before that. So I think it's interesting in this context, he's got the religious authorities coming to him, you know, the publicans calling him Peter, but then Jesus, then he uses Simon. I don't know. It's just, to me, that's interesting. It was like, okay, so I don't know. I don't know if there's any significance there or not, but I find that interesting that both names are used.
When Peter, he was the son of a fisherman, but he was Simon then.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And they caught a fish. For the tax.
Mm-hmm. But then I thought Jesus called him Peter because he said, I will build my
church.
Well, this is Matthew writing this probably later. After his name was changed, do we know if this happened before Jesus changed his name to Peter? But when Matthew wrote
I think if they're at this point in the progression of yes. Jesus' ministry, I think it would have happened previously.
Yes, me too. But he said, what thinkest thou, Simon? That's weird.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Jesus gave him the name Peter, but then he calls him Simon? Is there something there? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too hard about it.
Remember when Brother Oscar was bringing out, what was it, Joseph? Who brought, I'm thinking their children before the father, Israel, and he crossed his hands.
Yes.
And he said, but Israel beheld, which was...
Jacob was blind. Was it Jacob?
He changed that his name had changed.
Yes.
Jacob was the sorcerer.
And I think Joseph brought Ephraim and...
Judah?
Before.
Yes.
And Jacob crossed his hands. He says, no.
But Israel beheld, and Israel did.
Yes.
Which was...
Jacob was blind, but Israel beheld. I wonder if there was a hidden meaning in this
when he said Simon, and when it was Peter.
I don't know what made me think of that. I was just looking back at it after Buddy read it, and I was like, oh, he calls him Simon and Peter. That's interesting.
Let's see.
You know, because if he called me, you know, Brian, and then you called me Holden, which some of my friends call me that, that would be like, oh, that would catch my attention. It's like, oh, you just called me two different names. I know both of them as me, but...
But when it's Peter, when he asked, what the people were calling him.
And I like what Buddy was pointing out, is like, he used to be a fisherman, and what did he do to go get to collect the tax? He went out and cast a line, right? Hmm. Interesting.
Well, you know, Simon means hearing, and Peter means the rock. Simon.
Hearing. Interesting. Okay, I'm gonna let that sit a little bit. Pray.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Back in Matthew chapter 16.
Okay.
Verse 21 states that, and I'm comparing this verse 23 in chapter 17. Mm-hmm. 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 Let me see where I lost. Oh,
so You said 1621 and 1723, is that right?
Yeah, then yes. It says from the time before right. Jesus began clearly to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem mm-hmm. and suffer many things at the hands of the elders and the high priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised from death. Mm-hmm. And then on in this chapter 22, starting with 22. And then down to 23, and then they will kill him. He will be raised to life again on the third day. Mm-hmm. They were deeply and exceedingly grieved and distressed.
Yes.
Well, he already told them what's going to happen to him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And assuming the account is chronological, and you know, and then to yeah. Kathy's point, it's like, you know, to what extent do we know that it's chronological? I mean, that's our finite yes. understanding based upon, because yes. that's how we are taught to analyze things as we get taught to read and learn in school. But
you know, it says here in 21:16, Jesus began to show his disciples, and then Peter in 22 says Peter took him. What did he do? He took him aside. He took Jesus aside, began to rebuke him. Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." Well, who did he think he was? That was Peter, buddy.
Yeah, Peter.
That was our Peter.
And then what's Jesus said? Get behind me, Satan.
Sure is.
Then he turned and said to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me."
Well, and I think, you know, it goes back to that, you know, where we kind of began in terms of, and where we tend to go is like the carnal mind versus the spiritual mind, and in the sense that Jesus was talking to them, you know, it seems like Peter was in the natural way of thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And Jesus was already in acceptance, obviously, of what was to come. And it's easy for the emotions of or whatever is driving Peter to be in so much anguish about this. You know, it's easy to let that prevail. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, no, this is what I'm called to do. Get behind me, Satan. I'm not listening to you. The Father sent me for a specific and distinct purpose, and you're trying to fight that purpose. And it's because the natural mind is telling you these sorrow and it's filling your mind with, you know, thing, but you need to let go. He's saying, let go of that and get behind that.
You know how Peter to me was a bold one.
Yeah.
Because when they were in the ship out on the sea and it was rough and all that, they saw Jesus walking on the water.
So I want to do
who
it.
Who was the one that jumped out
yeah.
of the boat?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to criticize him and see that Jesus is rebuking him, but it's also, he also was brave, and and Jesus even says, "Ye have little faith," after he falls. Like, I don't think he was trying to insult Peter. He's just saying, "Hey, had you kept going along with the spiritual, you wouldn't have fell in the water."
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting here in 23, when Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me." And here's why. Mm-hmm. "Because, for thou savorest not the things that be of God." Mm-hmm. In other words,
you're clinging to those things that are not eternal. Is basically what he's saying.
Yeah, men, he says, but of men.
Yeah, and those things of men. I mean, maybe that's just the way that I read it, but a lot of times when Jesus deals with, you know, should we render unto Caesar what's Caesar? Should mm-hmm. we give the men what they're asking for? It's just like, give them what they're asking for, but, you know, that's, it's almost like, yeah, you know, like, sure, go ahead.
Give it to them, yeah.
Give it to them, but there's something bigger here, and there's something.
You're in this world,
that's just a distraction.
You're not of this world.
Yeah, that's the distraction of the devil taking you away from clear vision of what I want you to see and what the Lord would have you and the abundance of that's going to come from that is well exceeds and is everlasting. Whereas what they're talking about, you know,
When he asked Peter, when he said, what do men say I am? And different ones were saying, Elijah and all of
that. Who do you say?
And they said, but who do you say I am? And he said, thou art the Son of God. And he let Jesus hit my Father.
Yeah.
This was not him speaking out of reality that he knew this. He was speaking out of what God was speaking through him, showing him. Yeah, this is
revealing himself to Peter. Yes. And I think, you know, it's easy to kind of sit back and be a critic of Peter and say, well, Peter, you just don't get it, man. Like, listen to what he's telling you.
Listen to what, when we look at our own
life. Then, but then we got to evaluate through the lens of our own life. I mean, look, you know. So, yeah.
All the times that we failed and he has forgiven.
Man. Yeah. So,
and raises back up.
Yeah, and I think that's why God gives us this beautiful word and allows us the fellowship to come together and discuss it and see it through the lens of our own lives and own experiences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting because that may well be the key to that Peter and Simon thing too. Because he said, get thee behind me, Satan. Well, Simon, you know, Simon was just like Jacob. And Peter is like Israel. You know,
yes,
one is
yeah.
the carnal man and one is the spiritual man.
Yes.
So when he said,
church.
He was speaking to Simon, he was speaking to the guy that doesn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, that differential between the carnal mind and the spiritual mind.
Yeah.
That Brother Oscar and Brother Eddie and all mm-hmm. that taught us so many years back, and you know, and not that they taught us it was revealed to them through the Lord. I believe that's what I believe in.
First comes the natural, and then comes the spiritual.
We got 8 till. Till 11.
You've got 8 minutes? Is that what you were saying?
It's 10:52.
Yeah, I see that. I just love it. Well, maybe we better get out there, huh?
Yeah.
Want to start 18 next week, or you want to do a little more research on Simon and Peter?
No.
We'll just go with the flow.
I'll write where we left off.
So thank you.
We don't have to remember where we leave off.
I'm going to have to take a picture of it, too, because I had to call her.
Where we leave off? What?
We left off at 27, which is the
end of chapter.
Begin at chapter 17.
So we're starting at 18:1.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Start. I want to change the table.
I always think I'll remember when I'm sitting here.
Yes.
And then by tomorrow morning, I've forgotten that I even went to church.
What's the date next Sunday?
Today's the 28th, and that would be 2 and 5, 7 and 5.
No, day's 18.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
6:28. Okay, 18 and 7 is 25.
All right, so 7:25.
Next week.
18:1. All right,
yes.
There we go. 18:1, and that was math. Where is Matthew?
Okay.
All righty.
Start. Okay, there we go.
Very good.
Okay, right, God, who would pray to close us down?
Father, thank you for this opportunity today to be together and discuss your word, Father.
Thank you, Lord.
And Father, just thank you for giving us ears to hear and the mindset to understand what you're trying to show us.
Yes, Father.
And we want to give you all the praise and glory. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.